kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have another reviews episode lined up for you, and we have a lot of reviews to take care of this time. We're going to start off like we usually do. Purnell, how are you doing?
I'm sleepy, and I'm caffeinated. I don't know how that combination works, but it is doing it today. It doesn't. It's trying to. Something's happening to me, but I think it's just resulting in inefficiency. Aside from that, I ate a bag of tuna fish. And I was playing Bloodstained earlier, and I haven't played enough to give a decent verdict on it, but I'm hoping that the hype is real and that it's good. And that aside, just, you know, prepping for my board game trip soon, because I'm obsessed with board games, if you can't tell.
Yeah.
Went to too many games last weekend. Didn't intend to spend any money, but there was a guy selling a board game, he was trying to unload some inventory at his store. And he was dropping things at like 75% off. So I'm going on like the websites and checking how good these games are and how much they sell at other places. And I was like, holy crap, these are good deals. I have to get these. I can't just let this sit. So I dropped like $40 on board games when I would have spent $150 on them otherwise or whatever.
Jesus.
So, yeah, big box game too. This weird game called Nations or something from some Helsinki corporation from Finland. I don't know. Board games are weird, but I have a lot of them now.
That sounds like me and GameStop today.
Oh, what happened to GameStop?
Went to GameStop. My wife and I, we had dinner at Pizza Hut, and then we stopped at GameStop at the mall just to walk around, kill some time. And they had a table out with a bunch of like Funko stuff, like those mystery boxes that they sell. And then there were two statues. Yeah, and then there were two statues, a Mega Man 11 statue and Pete from Kingdom Hearts, Disney Pete.
I mean, you know, there was a Mega Man 11 statue.
Yeah. But they were both on clearance for $10 a piece.
What were their normal prices?
I think Pete was $50. I don't know what the Mega Man one was.
Shoot, good. Now you got me thinking I need to go check my local GameStop, though I'm guessing that was a local only sort of thing. Like, no, just that store was doing.
I looked on their website, and on the website, they have just a $10 clearance section of statues. Wow. And it's, you know, a lot of them aren't in stock online, so you got to hope your store has it. But there's hundreds of statues that they're clearing out.
Well, I know what I'm looking up after this episode's over. That Mega Man statue. I don't even know what it looks like. It could be a complete turd. And I'm like, it's Mega Man in statue form. I want that. That's all there is to it. I like me some Mega Man.
It's a pretty cool figure. I like it.
I hope so, because if you don't, you know where to ship it.
Man, you could just come up and take it yourself.
Yeah, but then that would be problematic, because then I got to dodge your security system and all that. Well, you could just say, hey, I'm giving it to you, and everything's easy and free and clear. No questionables, no issues, no concerns. Just free handle.
Yeah, I can't tell what the original price on that was. It's on their website is Mega Man 11 Diorama Statue. It's Mega Man and Dr. Wily. And Dr. Wily's like on his knees begging like it's the end of the game, and his head bobbles.
Oh, like the actual fake Wily statue, fake Wily robots, rather?
I guess so.
Is it on a spring?
Just the fact that the head bobbles is great. It doesn't show the spring, so I think it's not meant to be a robot. Just it's a bobblehead. It's cool, though.
I got this feeling it has to be. Like, even if they don't show the spring. Like, because you know when you beat those Mega Man games, it's the same spiel every game. Dr. Wily starts bending over. He's like, hey, forgive me. And you're standing there, and they turn out it's a fake Dr. Wily, and then the head pops off and starts bobbing back and forth, like, oh, it's a fake! No one saw that coming! I don't know. There used to be a Mega Man game specifically based around Dr. Wily acquiring funding to build his next castle.
Oh, God.
Because that's always been, I think even as a child, I can't even make this an adult problem. Even as a kid, I remember playing those games and going, who is funding these things? He gets 8 new robots every game, and each of those robots gets a swarm of minions. Infinite minions, but I'll let that slide. Technology for the time. But swarms of minions, and then when you beat them, they each took over a residing area of the environment, so they just stole previously existing land. Then you have to go to Wily's castle, which is freshly constructed every time.
Complete yeah.
with traps, new monsters, usually with the same specs from the new monsters in the game, or robots from the game, which means he had been, this wasn't even a long process. This was, I have an idea, I'm going to get these things built up sometime between the previous game and this game. I got all this money, built all this equipment, and I can get a plan in motion. And Dr. Light and Dr. Wily have not died during the process of any of this, because this should take time, but maybe the 20XX era had technology that we just can't fathom. So things get built faster. Things happen quickly.
Yeah. It's a whole new world when you think about it.
A whole new mechanical world.
A new fantastic point of view.
Where my Begabuster goes pew pew.
Oh, man. Anyway, we have a lot of games that we got to take care of tonight. Should we get started on these?
Let's go, because I have a Mega Man statue to shop for.
All right. Well, the first game to talk about tonight is called Super Neptunia RPG, developed by Artisan Studios, published by Idea Factory International, released June 20th on Steam for $39.99, June 25th on the Switch and PS4 for $49.99. Neptune, stricken with amnesia, awakes in a mysterious world where 2D reigns supreme. With a little help from her friends, Neptune embark on a journey to regain her memory, save the world, and 3D games as we know it. Purnell, tell us about Super Neptunia RPG.
I have such mixed feelings about Super Neptunia RPG. This is going to be one of those ones where I describe it and give my input, but it's almost left to the devices of the listener to go from there, because this is a game. So, first and foremost, the game is a matter of you trying to save a world from a scourge, I like quote-unquote scourge, who is trying to destroy 3D gaming and focus solely on a world that's built around the design and implementation of 2D games, including turning your game world into a 2D environment, which is why the entire game takes place in a 2D atmosphere, going left to right, up and down, but no 3D movement. The way the game plays can best be compared to Valkyrie Profile, an old franchise from Square Enix that originally started in about 1999 or 98. I can't remember. It's been a long-ass time. But in those games, they had 2D movement, which involved platforming and kind of engaging enemies on the actual platforming screen, exploration screen, I'll call it. And then that transitions into a combat system. And in that game, once you went into it, you had four characters attacking characters on the left-hand side of the screen. Each of those characters would have attacks that you would then use button inputs to activate, and then they would perform them. Neptunia RPG does a similar thing, but whereas Valkyrie Profile gave every character four attacks and you would push the button to run through them in sequence, Neptunia does not do that. Instead, what it does, which I think is kind of cool, honestly, is each person in your team, whether it be like, for example, Neptune or Vert, I always call her Vert, would have their attack, their formations, that they call them. When they're in the lead of the party, they are in what's called a formation. And when you are in a formation, you can equip one attack to the character, each character in the formation, so that when you press their respective button, so circle, X, square, or whatever your console of choice is, when you press those buttons, you'll perform that attack, so long as you have the AP built up to perform the attack. If you are to, say, want to use a different move, you would press either the left trigger or the right trigger, and your party would rotate, which will change the leader of your party and also result in changing to a new formation. So think of it as like a clock, and your leader is always at 9 o'clock. If you hit the right trigger, that leader will go to 12 o'clock, and the person that was in 6 goes to 9, thereby changing the formation, and everybody's attack is different based on what you equipped in the menu. It sounds more complicated than it is. Actually very simple, though admittedly, I'll admit it also becomes interesting to try to keep track of as you remember, what attack did I give this person for this formation or whatever. And I'm not going to lie, I was struggling with that. So it got to the point where when I was fighting different monsters and I knew what their weaknesses were, I set up my party to give me very specific attacks in specific places. So I didn't remember what everyone could do. I only remembered what specific people could do. And I rotated to those people in those formations and did their attack to hit effect weaknesses. And the reason why you want to do weakness attack based damage, if you can, is because remember how I mentioned earlier the AP gauge is how you determine how you perform attacks and movements?
Yeah.
Well, if you hit an enemy with a weakness, you'll get an AP bonus, which will allow you to attack more. So if you are able to keep chaining weaknesses, you can borderline attack indefinitely. However, if you are not affecting weaknesses, you will find yourself doing an attack or two, then sitting there and watching your AP gauge slowly build up until you have enough to do another attack. So combat can bounce between being rather a string of attacks or a slow slog waiting for your next ability to do a move. Now, my first issue with this game is factoring in right now as I discuss the battle system, because if this worked out the way I wanted it to, this game could have easily been like a very fast-paced back and forth. Hey, I got five attacks lined up. One, two, three, four, and they're just going on. That would have been awesome. But what ends up happening is, and I'm not sure if it's because of how they animated the characters or just the way it was programmed. I have no idea. But depending on the attack sometimes, things can get muddled. And what I mean by that is there's been times where I pressed the button and the character didn't move because they were queuing up the attack for the enemies on the left, which wasn't telegraphed, by the way, just a light showed up and I got hit with a ball or ball of light. And as a result, I'm waiting for my attack to go. But sometimes the game will know I hit a button twice and it'll restore those two button presses, even though I didn't even know I had to get to do them because I'm waiting to do my move. There's been other times where, like, I'll fight a boss where he'll throw like a large ice beam. It'll shoot across the screen and hit everybody, and and it becomes so chaotic because he built up a lot of AP, so he's doing multiple moves, that I don't even know when it's time for me to do what I want to do. So I'm like pressing him, like, okay, come on, do a thing. Am I able to attack? I have the AP for it, but I don't know if I'm being interrupted or not. It's so awkward.
I'm pushing now, the thing. Do the thing I'm pushing the thing for.
Exactly. Now, that's not to say the player can't get used to it. I mean, I had to, because I mean, I'm still playing through the game. It's just a matter of, it was annoying to even have to. I mean, if you've ever played Valkyrie Profile, for listeners who have, that game was fairly seamless when you were doing stuff. Like, you knew when you couldn't do something. I guess it helped that with that game, you had a turn, and then the enemies had a turn. So that definitely helped there, whereas in this game, it's asymmetrical. Everyone's attacking when they can. And I think that throws off the loop because sometimes they interrupt each other. But that is an annoyance in a system that otherwise I think is kind of cool. I like this. I like the whole rotating the party to get the format that you want to use the attacks that you want. You're essentially queuing up four different types of attacks per guy. And also worth mentioning about that formation is you can only equip certain attacks under certain formations. And
interesting.
And I should mention this, too. I said you can only equip certain attacks under certain formations, which means you can't spam, you know, edge attacks on magic formations because you can only use magic in magic formations. But you might be asking after I said that, what the hell does he mean, different attacks, equipping attacks? Well, this game, in a fashion similar to Final Fantasy IX, allows you to learn a variety of abilities and skills. These can all be learned by way of buying new items, as in armor, weapons, and accessories, and then equipping the characters. And each of those items can have skills that can be learned by your party members, so long as you have them equipped. When you initially equip an item, you will have access to every skill that item has, so long as your party member is allowed to use them. And as you use that item in combat, you'll gain experience, which will ultimately allow you to learn those skills permanently. And once you've learned them, you can still use them, or rather equip them, even with the weapon not being on your person, or item, or whatever being on your person. So you'll find yourself going to stores, buying a bunch of stuff, because you want the abilities, and not even really all that concerned about what the stats mean for you, and how they affect you. Something of which I did enjoy. I've always been a sucker for skill systems that are learned by your equipment. I don't know what it is about it, but it makes me feel good. And it also kind of adds a little bit of joy to the grind because I feel like, oh, all right, I have this thing. I got to put my work in. But when I'm done, this is my skill. Or if I don't want to put the work in, I can just run around with it until it's done and then swap it as I progress through the game. So, but of course, analysis paralysis, but one thing I will say that could be an annoyance, but it's not really a bad thing to the game. It's just a thing that's there, is that very early in the game, you gain access to a lot of things to buy. And you don't have a bunch of money with which to do it. So that could be a good thing. It may say, hey, you get to choose the direction you want your guys to develop in, because we didn't intend for you to buy everything and learn it as you go. We intended for you to buy the thing you want, utilize that, and then next time you're at the store, if you have enough money, buy a different thing. You know, so I guess that goes either way. Sometimes I think it'd be pretty cool. But that's pretty much how the battle system works and how the shopping works and things of that nature in the game. Exploration in the game, like I mentioned earlier, is a 2D environment. And it's like a, also like Valkyrie Profile, everything's left to right 2D, but the entrance and exits to environments is based on the foreground and the background of the screen. So as you're running down a corridor, if you see a marker at the bottom of the screen or at the top of the screen, that gives you the cue that you can transition to another area of the world. So the map is interconnected by nodes, like wire-connected nodes, and you go between the areas exploring and fighting. You come across enemies on the map screen visually, and you can strike them to get early combat engagement. You eventually start getting abilities that will allow you to traverse the environment better, most notably a double jump, which when you do get it, it will feel good, because this game has a weird penchant for showing you things early on that you cannot access. You don't know how if you're going to be able to access them or not, and you'll find yourself beating yourself over the head trying to figure out how to do this thing where you're not actually equipped to do it yet. Like, one of the very early quests in the game is find my four kids and bring them home for dinner. And I'm thinking, okay, that's an easy experience. I just got to go find her four kids. And there's one kid that's on, like, a rooftop that I have no clue how to reach. I'm sitting there thinking maybe there's a doorway in one of the buildings that will let me go up to the roof. If there is, I never found it. So I'm guessing I need, to come back there later. But I never went back because, leading into the next thing, quests pop up like gangbusters. They're freaking everywhere. Everyone's got something for you to do. Mostly it's just like fetch quests or kill these number of guys, but there's a lot of quests out there. And while that's a good thing because it means you always have something to do if you just want to run around and have an excuse to kill stuff and explore, it also means if you're a completist, you're going to be doing a lot of questing for rewards that you may well even get outclassed for by the time you finish them. Like, hey, 500 experience, that would have been good four levels ago. Now it's just kind of trash. But the option is there for you to engage in all those quests, of which there are a lot of them. Though I'll admit also one downside, though, depending on who you are, you probably won't even care about this, is there are NPCs strewn about the different town areas of the game. And when you come across them, a lot of the time, the NPC, when you click on them, will just say nothing. It'll just have ellipses in their text box. And that's because this game is designed, in a sense, to make most of the NPCs only talk when there's a quest line lined up for them to actually be engaged. So you might see a person, there's like ellipses over their head, but then like an hour later, you come across a quest that says, go deliver this thing to this person. And now that person will say, thank you for the box, I appreciate it. And then next time you talk to them after that, dot, dot, dot. So don't be shocked if you talk to a bunch of people. It's like, why aren't they saying anything? It's because they're being queued up for a later request. So it's kind of a weird thing there.
Nice.
But it's odd in the sense that I feel like I have a number of weird negatives about the game to say. I totally forgot to even mention the sound, which is that while the music is really good and the voice work is really good, like the characters, the people they get the voice, the Neptunia cast is back for this game, and like usual, they're doing a fantastic job. I like their voices. But there's also like weird tracking on sound sometimes, where like the best way to put it is I fight a battle. When I use the Glacius Edge attack, she'll say ice cold, and she does the attack. Every time you do it, she probably will say ice cold.
No.
You'll get sick of that, but that's not even the thing I'm getting to.
So they need more variety in their lines, for one.
That would be nice, very much so. Or just not even make them say the comment every time. Like every other time they do the attack, say it. But what ends up happening sometimes is you'll beat the fight after doing an attack, and the winning music will start to play. She'll make her battle win quote, like, she'll hum the Final Fantasy theme song or victory theme, which I thought was kind of cute. But then as it's loading out to the screen, she'll then say ice cold. I'm like, what? Like, it had queued up the words, but it didn't know what to do with it because you beat the boss or beat the enemy with the attack. So I was like, well, we'll just do the win condition music in voice, and then we'll just slap that extra attack vocal at the end there. No one's going to care. No, I noticed it, and it was really weird and kind of jarring, too. But, again, it's not a game breaker. It's just something that I noticed. I feel like my come away from this game is that the humor is there. It's very much a Neptunia game. But due to a number of the issues that I had with it, it's hard to have it. I feel like this is one of those things where I feel like it's mostly a recommendation to people who are already well entrenched in like the love of Neptunia games. Like, I like Neptunia game, which means it's easier for me to be like, you know, this stuff is annoying, but it's not a killer of the game. I want to press forward because I like seeing the characters laugh and chuckle and do dumb stuff and just interact with each other, because that's very much a joy in this game. And I still find myself scratching the itch of, okay, new equipment. Let's get those skills, baby. Let's make them skills happen. But if you don't see yourself being that person, if you don't see yourself going, oh man, I can't wait to hear more Neptunia nonsense and more fourth wall breaking and everything else like that, or, you know, being willing to, you know, look past the stuff I just described, then this may be a harder recommendation. But if you are the type of person that could tolerate that stuff based on the gameplay that I mentioned, and like I said, I really hope maybe somewhere down the day even patch the combat so that's a little bit more even flowing, I guess is the best way to put it. So you don't have those situations where the laser beam poops across the screen and everything slows. It's like, what? When do I attack? When is it my time? If they can make it easier to deal with that, I think it'd be even easier to sell. But if you can handle all the stuff I described, I think there's still a fun game here. It's just, I really wish it baked a little bit longer so that it could be an easier recommendation to a wider audience.
Yeah, it sounds like one of those games that is perfect for fans of the series, but not necessarily for newcomers to the series.
Yeah, and I feel like I'd even be harder pressed to even, like for example, the traditional Neptunia games. I had a buddy of mine who, he got into them after the Vita versions of them, the Rebirths or whatever, and he came away loving them. And he's usually quite a stickler for games. Like, if it's got even if it's got flaws, he'll knock it, hardcore knock it down. But he loved those games. And I have to say, personally, as someone who's a lot more lenient than he is to games, those are a great entry point to the series. So that when stuff like this come along, you're like, okay, well, I'm already here. I'm having a great time. So I would not want this to be the introduction to the Neptunia games, because I feel like they've done better. And you should start from those games, and then you'll be more forgiving of something like this, because, again, you just want to play more fun Neptunia games at this point.
Yeah. Well, overall, what is your verdict on Super Neptunia RPG?
I think it is a try it, but if you're, like I said earlier, if you're not truly engaged yet into the series, I recommend starting with one of the more traditional games and then coming back to this one.
Makes sense. But if that's not your ideal cup of tea for Idea Factory, we have another game to tell you about. Dragon Star Varnir, developed by Compile Heart, published once again by Idea Factory International. This one released June 11th on the PS4 for $59.99. Dragon Star Varnir is a JRPG that follows a knight as he reluctantly joins the very witches and dragons he was taught to hunt. Now afflicted with magical abilities, after his life is saved with the help of blood from a dragon, he must fight against the empire he once swore to protect. Pernell, tell us about Dragon Star Varnir.
Well, Dragon Star Varnir is an interesting title in that it has followed another game that they've put out this year called Death End Request, which, as you recall, I reviewed that, like, I guess back at a couple months ago for the PS4. And I very much enjoyed that game and felt that it was a strange departure from the traditional Idea Factory fare. This game is very much along that vein, too. Even though it has a number of the traditional Idea Factory tropes that I could take or leave, which I'll get into, it does have a story that I actually felt interested in following. I like the characters that I'm dealing with within the game, and it's actually surprisingly more mature than I'm used to getting from Idea Factory fare. I want more stuff like this. Give me more of this. And I know some people are listening to me, like, what the heck, man? Give me some more of my Japanese weird tit or whatever it goes down with. And my response to that is like, hey, they can do both, okay?
Yeah.
But all I know is I like this. Give me more of this. Now, the game itself is very dark. the idea, the premise is that, and this isn't a spoiler, because it's literally the very beginning of the freaking game. Main character was a knight. Some situation occurs, things go awry, and he dies. But right before he dies, he is rescued by a witch by turning him into a witch unintentionally, mind you. She did a thing to help him, which resulted in him becoming a witch. So as a result of this, he is now wrapped up in their plight. And what a freaking plight it is. And I'm not going to go into that. Well, I guess I have to, because that's part of the game mechanics. But there is a condition regarding witches where they are kind of a cursed species. They are hunted by the kingdom for death. They are also hated by dragons. So dragons want to kill them. But here's the caveat. They are also incubators for dragons, and they feed on dragon blood to survive. And the more dragon blood they eat, the more they feed a dragon that is resting in their uterus, and eventually the dragon hatches from within them and kills them.
Hell?
Yes. And also, if they don't eat dragon blood, they lose their mind and go insane. So you can't win. You're kind of screwed either way. But fortunately, there is a situation in place where there is a hope of a means to remove the curse that plagues the witches and allow them to live their lives as normal people again. So that is the main meat and potatoes of what you're trying to do in the game, aside from all the nuanced plot. If you are trying to cure the witch curse and save you and your friends, your newfound friends, because before that incident, they hated you and you hated them. But you're coming accustomed to your newfound friends and trying to help them cure this curse. You guys don't have to worry about succumbing to dragon embryo uterus repriation from within us or whatever. So the actual game. So this game has a battle system that is very unique from not just Idea Factory, but a lot of turn-based RPGs in general. So it has a, let me see, 3D three-dimensional square that you fight in, that the enemies fight in, rather. Your main party members are all flying, and there's a high, medium, and low tier that you can reside in. The enemies also have high, medium, and low, but there are also three levels going forward and back. So that's what I meant by a 3x3-dimensional square that the enemies reside in. On your turn, you can choose whether you want to use a magic attack or a physical attack. If you use a magical attack, you don't have to be on the same level as the enemy you're fighting to do it. But if you use a physical attack, you do have to be on the same level they are on. Sometimes, depending on the level that you are residing in, you'll get specific stat bonuses like magic attack up or physical attack up or higher defense or what have you. So you'll be a little bit tactical about deciding what formation you want to set up and how you want to position your guys. And also, it determines what certain attacks the enemies can do to you. So like, you might have an enemy that does a breath attack that will spray across an entire row. If you're all on that same row because you're trying to get the same benefit, you're also now going to succumb to a group attack that you otherwise could have avoided. So there's one other function that I did not mention prior to this. There's attack, there's magic, and there's also a devour skill that exists in the game. And what that is when you are fighting, if you, it's like, think of like something like Pokemon. You know how a Pokemon enemy hit point is low enough, you throw the ball, you catch the Pokemon. Well, in this game, if an enemy's hit points get low enough, you can use a devour skill to finish them off and in turn eat them. Because, hey, that's what you do. You eat shit. Mm-hmm. And when you consume the enemy, you take on a core. You acquire their core. This core translates into the way of which you learn new skills and abilities within this game. You are then able to take skill points. So I don't know what just call them skill points, because that's the easiest way to put it. You take the skill points you earn from combat, and you can apply it to these different cores you acquire to learn different abilities. Think about the sphere grid system in Final Fantasy X, how there were a bunch of nodes connected by lines, and each of those nodes reflected on a different ability. Each core is like a miniature sphere grid, where there might be anywhere from like three nodes, to like 15 nodes. And you use your skill points within that to unlock different abilities and stat boosts to bolster your strength in your characters. And once you've learned new skills and abilities, you can then equip them for the character. You can equip up to 5 different physical attacks, 5 different magic attacks, 5 different devour skills, and 5 different stat boosting abilities, like passives. So you can get pretty creative if you want between who you eat and how who you eat and how you allocate your skill points. You can get really nutty. Now, you could be tempted to try to give every character every ability, though that could get really teased, which I'm warning you about that right now. I started doing that originally and then said, screw it, I can't do this anymore. Or you could do what I ended up doing ultimately, which is you progress through the game and you eat guys as you see them, as long as there's a guy available to eat the monster. And then you just build your characters based as best you can around that. But beautifully enough, at least, you don't have to just use 3 party members at a time, whereas there's more than that. This game has the ability to allow you to have your 3 attackers and then 3 supporters behind you. So your first party member will have 1 support, your second party member, 1 support, same for the third. In combat, you can switch between each of them at will without loss of a turn. So you could have a character in the front, but then the character behind them has skills meant to balance if the first guy can't do what you need him to do. Like, okay, I need an ice move. He doesn't have one, but the guy behind him does. So I'll switch him in, do ice attacks, and affect some weaknesses and go nutty kabuddy. It's honestly very convenient. I've come to hate when games offer you a bunch of party members, but then you're stuck only using a certain amount of them. And by doing so, the other guys fall behind in experience and skills or whatever. Not so in this game if you're smart about it, because they don't make it. It's not really an issue to switch between guys on the fly. Also worth noting in combat, as you are progressing through fights, you take hits and give hits and give damage rather, you will slowly build up a dragon core gauge. When that gauge blows, you morph into a dragon form. You don't become a dragon, you just become half naked and you have a bunch of like tattoos and mess. It is what it is. But what happens when that occurs is that your attacks all do more damage. I can't recall if you have better defense or not, but I know you do more damage with all your attacks. And you also get a unique devour skill that does a ton of damage and makes it more likely for you to consume the enemy once you've hit them. This is actually quite the boon. It comes in handy quite a bit in the game. You'll use this a lot. You don't really get a choice in the matter because it happens when it happens, but you'll be always glad when it does. And I forgot one other thing. There's a lot in the combat in this game, which is a good thing, I'll admit. There's also something called, I guess I'll just call it weak point dogpiling. That's not the game's name, but they should have called it that. So while you're fighting an enemy, like I said, they have weaknesses. Every enemy has a weakness, whether a physical type of attack element or a magic type of attack element, or both, one of each type. And if you attack them constantly using those abilities to hit them with their weaknesses, you could get their fear gauge to maxed out, which triggers a weak point dogpile. That makes it so that every character in your party gets 1 free attack on them. You don't choose it, so they just rush them and hit them. And the last person within the sequence does a devour attack, which may likely kill them and, again, let you eat them. So it's very handy when that occurs because it's just free damage. You really don't lose for having it occur.
This review is making me hungry.
It should. Devour all that you hate. Devour all that you love. Hell, just devour all the fries, because God, I want some fries right now. And also, I've decided after this review's over, I'm going to freaking make some toast the old-fashioned way on a stove with a pan. No toaster.
Interesting.
Maybe just do grilled cheese. I don't know. I haven't figured it out.
Oh, man, I want a grilled cheese so bad right now.
See that? Thank Dragonstar Veneer for that. So in addition to all that stuff, the traditional gameplay aside from the battles is that you're running around on a series of 3D maps that you pick from a world map screen. And when you're running around on the maps, you can switch between their different party members at will, and they each have a different, map exploration ability that you'll be using to get around. Nothing overly complicated. We're talking simple stuff like one character can put a bridge over chasms, one can find hidden treasure, yada, yada, yada. Stuff that is more flavor. It wouldn't make or break the game for it to be there, but it is, and you utilize it. It's not a big deal. The game, honestly, I think the environments look nice. The character models still look really nice, though I really wish If you are, they're not listening because they're a Japanese company. But if the U.S. branch is listening and can convey this to the Japanese branch, is there any way possible to take one of those stills that they make for all these different characters? But then they have like three stills, one for when they're standing still, maybe one for when they're shocked, just different versions. Make it like, for example, there'll be a scene where like, they're cooking in the kitchen, right? And rather than just have, you know, a still of them doing something, you don't even have to have it animated. Just have a still of the guy stirring a pot. I don't know. Instead, they take the normal still and just have it bop back and forth like a puppet. And again, while it's not, you know, really hurting the game that it does that, I feel like we've reached a point that even, you know, low-costing games can make it look a little nicer when they have that kind of stuff happen. Like, come on, just give me a third frame. Give me a third frame of still. I don't know, something that just makes it look different. But I look at this and I'm like, okay, I'm enjoying the story. I'm enjoying the dialogue. But this bobbing still is taking me out a little bit. Come on now. That's just me being a goofy griper.
Yeah, just a little.
Just a tad. Though I have to mention this thing too. So early on, the game is kind of generous to you. Unless you just kind of do whatever you want all willy-nilly as you explore the game. But eventually they introduce a sort of extra mechanic, in which case you'll have three young dragon girls who are you're trying to prevent from going feral or dying. And what ends up happening here is that while you are playing the game, they are back at home at your base being there. You have to be mindful of how long you're out doing stuff, and you have to be mindful enough to go home on occasion and give them food and interact with them, because if you don't, they could die or they could lose their shit. Yeah. And they're adorable little girls. So you're like, I don't want them to go bad unless you're just that sadistic, in which case, fuck you, buddy. But, the typical person is not going to want to see them go, but they did a good job of making these characters something like, I don't want them to die. I don't want these kids to get hurt. So you'll find yourself wanting to do a lot of exploration, but you can't putz around just being stupid, because if you do, you'll have some dead kids on you, and you don't want that.
Not at all.
But not at all. So it introduces a bit of a time management element that could go either way for a person, but I feel like at that point when it finally kicks in, you're invested enough in the plot that you want to see it through. I think if it happened at the very beginning, though, I'd probably have been kind of pissed off. Like, oh, come on. Please get me. Let me get used to the game before you hit me with this nonsense. But honestly, you deal with it. Also, there's a weird thing that I honestly never truly got the handle on. I just kind of just putzed with it and let it go. So a more intrepid player might have more luck with it. But there is a sort of called alchemy system that the game has, where you can take resources. This is going to sound really goofy. You find resources in the field. You take them back to base. You can mix elixirs with the ingredients. When you've mixed the ingredients together and made an elixir, you can have a character drink the elixir. They will then ascend, for all intents and purposes, they will then barf out a monster, which you have to fight. And if you win, you get cool equipment. It's like a good way to just kind of grind up some cool items and equipment, because the gear is usually based on the character that you had drink the potion too. There is no price for error here. If you fail at the battle, if you don't lose the potion, you can try again. And if you do win, hey, you got some cool loot. I just never really got fully accustomed to like, okay, I want to make this potion at this level so I can drink this guy, because like I said, the person that drinks it determines what kind of loot you'll get. And the ingredients that you mix together determines the level of potency of your potion. And that potency determines what rank of equipment you get. And it gets into some stuff. It's just one of those where, like, you'll have to sit down with it yourself and deal with it. It's hard enough to describe freaking 3x3 dimensional squares. I'm going to go into the whole potion management system with you. But I will say, having discussed this game ad nauseum just now, I will say that the game is good, though. I personally found it enjoyable. It's the plot is nice. It's, again, more of the serious Idea Factory fare that I'm coming to like, just like how Death End Request had it. I want more stuff like this. Obviously, there's room for improvement, as there always is in games. But I want them to focus on this area and expand on it. Less of the, you know, weird junk like Omega Quintet from back in the PS4's early life, which I was like, yeah, I'm sure this is for somebody, but maybe not for me. But yeah, this game I think is pretty solid, especially if you're already in the Idea Factory, you should know to want this. I've rambled. Is there something you think that I may not have covered that I should, you know, give mention of?
No, the only thing I want to know is $60. What's your verdict?
I think it is a buy. Try it if you're not a traditional Idea Factory folk, but if you are, this is a definite buy. They did a good job with this game.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Delicious, too.
Oh, God, you're making me hungry again.
Devour. Just picture, you have these games where these characters like eating monsters and junk, and you just kind of imagine if they actually went all in on the graphics and junk, they'd be so gross, just covered in just whatever the hell they fought in the wild, and they go to town. It's like, all right, we're home, everybody. You stink. What does that smell? Oh, that's guts, lots of and organs and. It's disgusting out there. Do not go in the woods. We had a bit of a smorgasbord party, but hey, I got some cool cores. We'll check them out. It's like, I don't know. It's weird. It's very disturbing.
Oh, Lord. Pernell, what am I going to do with you?
Devour!
And now I'm going to make you review a third game, because the last game you're here to talk about is called Battle World Chronos, developed by King Art Games, published by THQ Nordic, released June 11th on the Switch for $29.99. Battle World Chronos is a turn-based strategy game deeply rooted in the hexagonal tradition of the genre. The planet is once again torn by war for the succession of a new emperor. Its destiny is in your hands. Pernell, tell us about it.
Well, I can outright say that introduction nails down quite a bit of the aesthetic of this game, which will pretty much lead into my ultimate, verdict of the game. This title is, I want to say it originally came out like 2013 on the PC, and fortunately it's getting some console ports, because as you already know, I'm always a fan of games getting off the PC and coming to consoles. I think it had Xbox and PS4 prior to this, but
yeah.
Again, Switch wasn't out back then, so Switch is out now, and that's why it's here. But this game was originally kickstarted with the intent being to make a title that was a throwback to 90s PC-style, strategy games. And with that, they succeeded hard freaking core. So you can participate in one of two campaigns, each was having a great deal of missions. More than I got through, I can tell you that friggin' much. And there's a number of skirmish battles, too. So, right off the bat, I'm going to say, value-wise, you're getting plenty of bang for your buck, because this game will not go down easy. It'll take a while. Also, it won't go down easy again, because the game very intentionally tells you at the very beginning, this is a hard game, and we did not pull any punches. Get good. It pretty much says that, though it also provides you with a lot of information in the form of a tutorial. But unfortunately, the tutorial itself is kind of meh, but it does give you enough information by way of its like encyclopedia system that you can easily go in and like look up stuff. And it tells you, here's where it is. It categorizes everything. So you can go through and kind of learn the game as you go. So, and if you're the type of person that was playing PC games in the 90s for the strategy element, you're familiar with that. You know what you need to do. Well, not gameplay, but you to go look up some information within the game, which is honestly very comprehensive. So that's a good thing. But gameplay itself, well, I'm just going to say flat out, the story, I really didn't care about it. Like, I tried. I really tried. I stopped caring. You are battling an evil corporation. Whatever. But the gameplay is honestly very nifty. It's very freaking meaty. So you are essentially on a hexagonal map, top-down view, and you are trying to fulfill a number of objectives. Usually it's like two objectives. Sometimes it's just one. But it might be something like capture the enemy base or defend this location. Or also, sometimes the requirement will actually shift with mid-battle. Like it might say capture this base, but then halfway through the battle, the game will say, oh, crap, we're outnumbered. You need to retreat. And then the objective changes to escape unharmed. So the objective will change a lot. But as you are doing this, you are controlling a myriad of units. There are honestly more units in this game than in any game of this type that I've played in ages. It's like 50 or 60 of them. Again, ranging from land, air, sea, buildings. There's a lot of shit. And you'll be controlling all of them.
Nice.
You'll be able to buy them from like various depots that are existing on the map, harbors, airfields, what have you. If they are enemy controlled, you can rush up to them using an infantry unit and attack them until you own them. Or if the game starts you with them, Merry freaking Christmas, you're looted. Typically, each of these locations, when you find them, may even have units already pre-established for you to just kind of send out into the field and get to work. But if they're not pre-established, you can construct them by way of using resources, though it's, thankfully it's not like as much of a headache as it is in a lot of other games. You're like constantly mining for ore or whatever. It's just a resource you just generate over time. The game has a lot of strategic depth to it. So, give an example. So one thing that I like about this heavily compared to a lot of other action strategy games is a lot of the units will have two motions. One will be the general movement, but then the second movement is something called a joker movement. Joker means if you want, you're allowed to move a second time. Or if you want to attack, you can do that too. Sometimes a unit will have nothing but jokers, which means you can have them move twice, attack twice, whatever. But it's kind of nice that the game will say, hey, we give you a variable movement, so you can do with it what you want. So, or nothing at all if you have no desire to utilize that unit again. I have found a great bit of enjoyment with that. Additionally, another thing I like about this game is that every unit is sacred. And I said I shouldn't go that far because this isn't Fire Emblem. But every unit is its own unit. And through enough combat, you can actually level up units in the game. They can get ranked up. And if you rank up a unit, you can acquire different upgrades for it. So you might get, for example, a tank that allows it that can do 20% more damage than the other tanks on the field. Or it might get a boost in movement. You get to choose. Because there's like four or five different upgrades available to every unit. And when you level them up, you get it. The way you level them up is by fighting constantly, winning battles, and not letting that unit get completely obliterated, because you can take it back to depots or you can find repair units out on the field. There's like actual items on the ground. You can just run over and say, hey, repair my unit. Thank you, and get a repair. But keep it in the game. It'll get stronger and become better for you to utilize. But like the game mentioned earlier on, this game is not easy. And one stupid decision, and you will find yourself at the mercy of the computer AI. It does not screw around. And it actually makes a lot of very smart judgment calls as far as how combat goes. So you need to be on your P's and Q's. And at least thankfully, there is like a quick save option, because some of the battles will take a while. And nothing hurts more than playing for a long time and then screwing up once costs you the entire struggle. So,
oh, yeah.
But fortunately, there are like saves within, so you can like save a battle, come back to it here and there, and just kind of bounder around with it if you need to. So you can like go back to an old save and try to fix your mistakes or whatever. So, but also I need to mention is that, like how I mentioned earlier, it's very old school gameplay. There is no visual flair, I'll say. Combat is the units on the map. When you move the unit up and it attacks a guy, everything happens there. You might see some tiny pixelated bullets fly at the tank and do damage to it. You might see a tiny pixelated rocket fly across and hit a guy. But what you will not see is like panned in cameras doing dramatic skirmishes with your units. You're getting a pure D 90 style hex based tactical game. And if you're cool with that, hot damn, you're in for a treat, because they went above and beyond to make a really solid strategy combat game. However, if you're coming in with the from the Fire Emblem, you know, Advanced Wars mindset, or recently released Wargroove, then either A, you need to scale down your expectations a bit and note that you're going to get a far more tactical game in exchange for visual flair, or you need to walk away, because this ain't going to cut it for you. So, but like I said, even with me saying screw the story, I don't give two hoots magoots about it, I enjoy playing it because I like the idea of like having tactical combat using really cool units, very diverse units at that, and going to town with them.
Nice. Well, then $30 on Battle Worlds Chronos. What do you say?
I think it's a solid buy it, honestly. It's just a matter of, again, knowing what you're getting into. But based on what I just said earlier, I think it's a genuine buy.
Does it play well on the Switch? Any issues in handheld mode or anything?
I didn't have any issues in handheld mode, but I also didn't like, I stuck solely with the single player mode. So, And I also did not, I stuck with button movement. I do believe you can do touchscreen stuff, but I was all about using my thumbs and doing whatever with that. But if you do decide you want to use a touchscreen, I recommend getting a stylus because, again, you want some precision in your actions in this game.
Oh, yeah.
But I will say, as a guy who didn't even bother with it for this particular title, the buttons do a good job of it. You have the left thumbstick and the right thumbstick. The left thumbstick moves the cursor. Right thumbstick moves the camera. And the cursor always centers when you move the camera. So if you see a guy on the other side of the map, you can scroll the camera till it's in the center and then move the cursor to finesse it. Boom, you're on the guy.
Nice.
It's very intuitive. I had no issues with that. Though I will say one complaint I had, I should probably note that, is you'll have to get used to what the different icons mean yourself in the game, because when you click on a character and it gives you a list of options via icons, the icons don't have a word under them saying, status or, tutorial or any of that stuff. It's just, here's the icon, click it, and then it does what it's going to do. So there will be a bit of a time curve of you learning what all the icons mean, but otherwise, it is what it is.
Yeah, sounds like you had three good games this week.
I did. Now I can go to sleep.
Do you have a favorite of the three?
Of those three, I'm going to go with Varnier, though. Nice. Honestly like that game a fair bit. And I do intend to see through to the true ending and all that sweet potato jazz. Because, again, it is a quality game. And I am a huge sucker for seer grids and having to beat guys up to get new abilities.
Nice. If anything, Idea Factory, if you're listening, this might be a good one to test the waters on Xbox and maybe release a couple games there.
Hey, it could happen.
I'd love to see it. I've been bugging Idea Factory and NIS America for years now. Like, hey, come on, throw us a bone with Xbox, please.
I got a feeling that when the issue there doesn't even lie with the American branch for those.
Probably not, but...
Couldn't hurt
they're,
to try.
They're though, the ones right? who I can bug. So,
touche. Come on, guys. Hook us up.
Oh, man. Pernell, it's always a pleasure having you on chatting about these games. Do you have any final words before we move on?
Nah, I think I'm pretty solid. But hey, if you have interest in some JRPG goodness, you have a plethora of them to choose from this episode. So get to town, get to playing.
All right, moving on. We've got our good friend Tim Ekibis joining. Tim, how's it going?
Hey, I'm here. I'm good. A little sleepy. It's been a long week. When we were recording this, I did a lot of work this week. All work and no play makes Tim need to sleep. Yeah.
Sound so awake.
I stayed up late last night playing video games because I didn't really get a chance to play much of the games this week. And then this morning I woke up and I was up for about an hour, and then my wife woke up and she was like, are you okay? And I'm like, I'm very tired. And she's like, just go back to bed. So I did and slept an additional 2 hours, but I'm still pretty tired, but it's all good.
All good. You ready to do some reviews?
Yeah, let's talk about some video games.
All right, you got two games to talk about tonight. The first one is called Double Cross, developed by 13AM Games, published by Graffiti Games, released June 19th on Xbox One for $19.99. Explore alternate dimensions, fight interdimensional criminals, and solve crimes in this thrilling action platformer. Tim, tell us about it.
All right, the thrilling action platformer, Double Cross. So there is, along with your action platforming, there's actually kind of a cool thing about this game. There's like a little bit of, just to kind of not bury the lead, there's a little bit of like adventure game investigate-y like thing, like problem crime solving going on in the background of it too. Cause you're like an interdimensional cop. And you know, your organization is they try to keep dimensions from spilling over into one another and causing problems. But there's some kind of a a mystery going on because someone in your organization has seemingly betrayed you. One might call it a double cross.
Like the name of the game.
Like the name of the game. Yeah. And I don't know, you're also crossing in between dimensions. There's like another version of your character. There's like layers of meaning hanging out there. So you have a mystery. A mystery is afoot that you're trying to solve, which involves you going to three different dimensions, primarily, which each have a bunch of different, well, not a bunch, but each have a few different stages each. There's like a casino planet, there's a dinosaur planet, and then the other one is kind of about goo, slime, it's like swampy. So you can jump between, like, the order of your stages is not set, and even the order of the stages within the different worlds is not set, so you can kind of jump around as you see fit. You have your main base area with a bunch of characters to talk to that'll give you information, and, that will come in handy because you find, like, you'll find objects, and they do a good job of setting this up, like, right off the bat, kind of in the tutorial, where it's like, you know, you get a few different items in your inventory, and you have to go and present them to different people. And it's just like an old adventure game where if you show the person the wrong thing, they're just like, why are you showing me this? It's because, like, well, because I don't know who I have to show this to, so I'm showing it to everybody. And then you eventually, you know, you find the right people, and they'll give you the information you need, and then you can kind of piece together your little mystery. But so after you do the tutorial one, like, the beyond that, it's much bigger. They make you kind of like, each world has three stages open to start, but the fourth one requires you to, like, piece together, like, solve one of those mysteries. Like, you have to, you got to solve the case and then present it to your boss before you know where to go with the fourth level, I guess I should say, is how it goes.
Yeah.
So that's a cool part of this game that I think sets it apart from other games of its ilk. Like, it's not the most, like, it doesn't have, like, an incredible amount of depth to it, but it's neat. You know, it's neat. I don't remember playing a, like, you know, straight up action platformer that had that kind of, like, adventure item findy, you know, talking to characters, aspect to it. So it's cool. Even if it's, like, a little simplistic,
and I wish it was, like, try something different.
Yeah, at least try something too. True. All right. But anyways, yeah, so, but most of the game, you're not doing that stuff. Most of the game, you are doing action-y, platform-y stuff. So you can jump, you got some punches. That's your main combat device, is you kind of have, like, a light punch, a heavy punch, and there's a handful, and I mean, like, very few combos you can do. You can knock enemies up into the air and jump up and punch them in the air, too. And, you know, it's simple. It's not like any kind of Devil May Cry type shit. Like, it's not the most advanced 2D action combat I've seen in my life. You do have, like, a few super moves to, like, show. Well, you can, you build meter, like, you collect energy that builds up an energy meter, which lets you, like, there's, like, a little AoE attack, and there's a fireball, and you can just hold down the button to have it heal you, which is what you'll probably do more often than not. kind of, I guess what feels like it's supposed to be the star mechanic of the platform is there's, like, this slingshot mechanic where there'll be, like, these little kind of grapple points, and you will need to, so, like, you hold down a button and it kind of slows down time for a little bit, and then you have to angle this, like, circle over the point, and then, it, you know, an arrow comes up, and then it slingshots you in that opposite direction. This is where we start to have problems. We have fucking problems with this game.
Uh-oh.
So just, like, doing, like, making use of the actual mechanic, like, the first time I used it and, like, kind of got a feel for it, I'm like, I don't think this feels entirely great. I don't think I'm going to like this as soon as it demands more than me than just, like, a simple, you know, one shot over a gap. And I was right. Now, it's not terrible, but it doesn't feel great. My biggest problem with it is that it doesn't let you use the D-pad to aim your little reticule. So it's a 2D game. I'm playing with a D-pad because that is what I am most comfortable with by far.
Yeah.
But you can't, like, you can't aim the reticle with the D-pad to actually target the little hook to shoot where you want to go. You have to use the analog stick.
So you have to jump back and forth.
Yeah, I hate that. I hate that. I mean, you could just play the game with the analog stick, but that, you know, that doesn't feel good to me. I'm not cool with that. And also, for reasons I mean, I can't explain that, but also there's, like, combat maneuvers you unlock, which require you to press, like a direction in the air or on the ground with an attack button to do the special move. You also can't use the D-pad for those. You have to use the analog stick. So I literally never use them.
Oh, man.
Except to figure out that, like, oh, they're not broken. They just require you to use the analog stick. And that really sucks. They should be able to use the D-pad for that stuff. Like, maybe it's not going to feel as good, but, like, going back and forth, especially in tricky sections, because, I mean, that's how I want to play. I want to use the D-pad. That's what feels best to me.
Yeah.
That was super aggravating. Otherwise, you know, the game it feels pretty solid. You know, it's not anything, like, crazy complicated. It's got, like, you know, a couple of neat ideas into it. The look of it is, you know, it's some pretty crisp 2D art, cartoony. Like, the backgrounds aren't anything, you know, too crazy or detailed. Like, everything's, you know, bright, bold colors, easy to pick things out. Like, the music is kind of hit or miss. Like, the very first casino stage, I think, has a really awesome song. But after that, like, some of the songs are good and some of the songs are just, like, whatever. As you go along through the levels, there's hidden gems that are stashed away that, as you collect them, that gives you upgrades. And your upgrades come in the form of, like, passive stuff, like just increasing your health or unlocking those aforementioned moves that I never use because of the controls. Or there's, you have, like, three slots, so there's three different things you can equip that either it's like, oh, enemies drop more energy, or this does more damage, or whatever, stuff like that. So there's, like, a degree of character customization you can do. And that's the game, pretty much. It also had this weird thing it would do where sometimes it would boot up and it would be in a different language.
That's always fun.
Sometimes it would be French, sometimes it would be Italian. Almost never when I booted up was it in good old English, you know? Which is weird, like, you know, I can get into the menus and switch it back. It was just like a weird little bug.
Well, weird little bugs and issues aside, $20 on Double Cross, what do you say?
So for me, like, I'm not going to be brutally evil with this game. I think it's mostly, it's a try it for me. Like, it didn't overly impress me with any aspect of its gameplay and was super annoying in a couple aspects, the controls mainly. However, I want to say that, like, my kid really liked watching me play this game. And I was kind of thinking about it, and I'm just like, yeah, you know, it doesn't really, as an adult who's played, you know, a ton of games, like, I'm looking for something a bit meatier. But for a kid, I mean, he's 4 right now, so he can't really play games yet. But, you know, for a kid that's like 6, 7, 8, I actually think they would really, really enjoy this game. This might actually be a really good game for someone to put in front of their kid, because they're probably not going to be as grumpy about not being able to use the D-pad for things. And, like, the whole, like, item puzzle-y adventure stuff is probably just the right level of complexity for them. For my opinion is to try it, but I also think it might be a very good selection for younger gamers.
Awesome. So it kind of rides the border between try it and buy it.
Yeah, I guess. It really depends on who you are and who is going to play it. But if you're, yeah.
Like every game, pretty much.
Yeah, I guess. But, yeah, if you're the kind of person who is, like, more interested in something like maybe the next game we're going to talk about, you're not going to be that interested in Double Cross.
All right. Well, the next game we are going to talk about is called My Friend Pedro, developed by Dead Toast Entertainment, published by Devolver Digital, released June 20th on Switch and Steam for $19.99. My Friend Pedro is a violent ballet about friendship, imagination, and one man's struggle to obliterate anyone in his path at the behest of a sentient banana. Tim, what the fuck?
Yeah, I know. A lot of people have been asking me about this game over the past couple weeks as they heard I was reviewing it, or I've just seen people buzzing about it. They're just like, hey, what's up with that? And I'm like, hey, you have to wait. so this is another stylish indie action game from Devolver. So exhausting. This game It is a 2D action game. It's 2D character models are 3D, you know, they're polygonal. It's really trying to capture the feel of like making a cool, like cinematic gun based fight action scene is what it's going for. There is pretty extensive use of a slow motion ability, which you have a lot of to use. like there's a meter and it's a pretty good sized meter, but also like it refills as you kill dudes. So you can really hang out in slow motion for a while. And though, I mean, it gets kind of tedious if you're just moving slowly and there's nothing going on the screen. But yeah, it's not like, I need to save my slow motion for this particular spot. It's like, no, it's like, see a dude, like slow down. Like it becomes the lobby scene from, it becomes the fucking Matrix.
It's there to be used. It's not there to look pretty.
It's there to be used extensively. It's not there for just like tough situations, you know, which I guess is maybe more, you know, Katana Zero was a game I played a couple months ago that had a little bit of a time mechanic in it. And that was more of a thing you'd save, for particular instances. This is just like, no, just like any dude, just go for it. And cause it's partially like, okay, I want to be effective and get through the level. And also it's partially like, I want to look cool. I want it to be cool while I'm doing it. You can dodge bullets. You just by kind of pushing the bumper there, or L, I guess it's not a bumper on this. You'll spin to dodge bullets. You can, when dual wielding weapons, you can aim them at different enemies, by holding, the left LR, I think it is. You can like jump in slow motion, like down, like off of a platform. There's guys on either side. You hold down the button to target the guy on each side of you, and you're like flying downwards, shooting Uzis at guys on each side of you. And then someone shoots a bullet at you, and then it's like, okay, you can then start dodging and spinning to miss the bullet. And in this case, you're like, man, my fingers are doing a lot of stuff right now. This is a lot for my fingers to do. It's not entirely comfortable. It's cool, but man, like, you are making use of a lot of buttons in certain moments in this game. You got pistols, Uzi, shotguns, assault rifle, sniper rifle, and a kick. pretty standard stuff, and it dishes it out slowly over the course of the game. But also, you know, each level kind of has, well, I mean, they introduce different gimmicks. Like there's zip lines. So you can go zipping over like a crowd of guys and hang from it upside down and guns blazing on them. Skateboards, barrels. You can ride on barrels. You can drop on top of people. You got to be mindful of like, you know, windows and doors and sight lines and stuff. So you got like 20 levels. None of them are too long. The game is pretty, it's a game, you know, where you're looking to be cool, be stylish, like get good ratings on levels, get high scores, throw your shit up on the leaderboards. Did I just start rapping? It's about score chasing. Like there is a story, you know, like a weird little story there. There is a talking banana that is flying around, next to you there the whole time. I don't know if that's really explained, but boy, does it end in a really fun, fucking weird way that, I'm not going to talk about, but man, it was something. It was a thing I had to show the wife. I'm like, this is what's going on right now, just so you can see.
See, I heard from someone else that the ending basically ruined the game for them.
What? Oh, come on.
It's like, this was an amazing game up until the ending.
That, I don't know what they're talking about. That's ridiculous. Like, I mean, well, because it's a thing. I don't know. I don't want to talk about the end of a game that just came out this week. But I thought it was pretty funny what happened. And I was amused. And also because I felt like it was kind of whatever. I felt like the boss, I felt like the hardest stuff was behind you. So this was kind of like coasting through the epilogue. I don't know. How could that ruin the game? I don't know. Maybe I'd have to talk to the person.
I don't know.
Different strokes, different folks. Pretty much. Yeah. So the graphics are, you know, decent. It's more about just like servicing the action. Like, it doesn't look too spectacular. Like, the areas are kind of drab and okay looking. Like, the music, nothing stuck out in my head for it. Yeah, it's just like sometimes I felt like, I don't know. I don't know whether it's just like I couldn't quite get into the groove of the level, or the level just didn't have a good groove to get into for me. I mean, the game's not like, if you die, like, you're generally checkpointed right there. Ammunition is decently plentiful, just so long as you're not just, you know, blowing your Uzi ammo on everything.
Spray and pray.
Yeah, spray and pray. Well, it's like you have to shoot, like, switches, too. So at that point, you should be pulling out your pistols to do that, because they have infinite ammo. You shouldn't be just like, all right, I'm just going to unload, you know, shoot my assault rifle at this lever to get through. No, like, take the second to switch real quick and do that. Yeah, so it was like some levels I was just kind of like, ah, okay, like, I'm just kind of getting through this and it's fine. And then some levels, you know, when it really comes together, it's just like so cool. But when it's not coming together, it's just like, it's fine, really. Yeah, it's a pretty solid game. It's a pretty solid little action game.
Well, then for $20, what do you say on My Friend Pedro?
It's going to be like, it's kind of like a light buy it. Like, $20 might be a bit much, I think, for some people. Especially in, like, honestly, out of the other Devolver indie action games I played this year, which would be Ape Out and Katana Zero, I think this is like my least favorite of the three by a significant margin. So if you haven't played those two, I would recommend them first. Though this is like just a it's a cool game, but it might not be $20 for everybody. It might be like a wait for a sale and check it out. Yeah. But I do think it's pretty fun,
and it has a sentient banana. So
it's got that sentient banana. It's never really explained how he gained sentience.
We'll never know. Maybe in the sequel or a prequel.
It's overripe, you know.
Oh, Lord. Tim, always a pleasure having you on, chatting about stuff. Do you have any final words?
I do not. I hope people are looking forward to hearing about some peachy balls in a few weeks.
All right, moving on. We've got Jacob Garner joining us. Jacob, how you doing?
I'm tired as hell. How about you?
Same. All right. That was a good chat.
Yeah, that was great. I'll see you next week.
So what have you been up to? How was your weekend?
My wife is away on business, so I got stuck with the kids.
Business of getting the hell away from you?
Actually, she's at a conference. She was at ALA.
Conference of getting the hell away from you. I didn't know they had an entire convention just dedicated to getting away from you.
Yeah, there's like 70,000 plus, you know, librarians who are just like,
God. Friggin' Jacob.
Giving a bad name to our, you know, to our careers.
Oh, boy.
On the plus side, she picked up lots of swiggity swag. So,
anything fun?
I don't know. She hasn't told me yet, but I'm assuming a big pile of graphic novels for me.
Nice.
Because apparently the comic book companies were out in force today. Like, there were a lot of, like, geeky publishing houses today. So, and also, this is something I don't get. Like, all right, so librarians by nature are geeks. Mm-hmm. Funko, like the makers of Pop and stuff like that, they make geeky crap. And on top of it, it's usually like they make con exclusive ones.
Mm-hmm.
Why not make one for ALA? Like, you have like 70,000 plus librarians there, you know. Plus, if you feel like just getting into the conference, like the trade show floor, that's $75 for the day.
Damn.
Yeah, but the thing is that you're collecting, like, you're 75. You, like, let's just say that you only go for the trade show part. With all the free shit you get, you easily make it up, like, in the first hour.
True. Same because thing all with the packs.
Right. It's just like all the publishers are just handing out all their crap for free. Like, I'm fully expecting, like, a nice stack of comic books and graphic novels just for myself. This isn't even including, like, the stuff that she's bringing home for the kids.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. Like, she's bringing home, like, 6 tote bags full of crap.
Jesus.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff.
Yeah, it is a hell of a lot of stuff. Plus, you know, she attended stuff for work. But yeah, so anyways, all right. So, like, how come, like, Funko doesn't hop in on this and just make, like, an ALA exclusive thing? I mean, like, there's already that, like, librarian action figure that came out, like, a few years back. Have you seen that?
No.
Oh, it's, all right, you've been to Gallery of Sound, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, remember, like, how in the back they would have those, like, weird action figures? It was, like, the crazy cat lady one.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, they also had, like, a Jesus figure that, that, like, was on wheels so you could have him walk on water.
No, Jesus.
Well, they actually made a librarian one, and it's based on a real-life librarian. I forget where the heck she's out of. But anyways, she, like, if you push a button on her back, like, she has a shushing action.
Oh, my God.
And she comes with, like, a stack of books, of course. But, oh, like,
Jesus.
Well, think about it. Like, Funko could easily make a pop of her, and everyone would be like, yes, I must buy. Like,
or well, hell, you should write Funko and tell them.
I'll get right on it. No, I'm just going to bitch about it on your podcast. So, you know, how many listeners do we average per episode?
Like 2.
2? Is that?
I'm like, oh. That.
So me and you?
Yeah.
Oh.
No one else listens.
I was going to say, do you actually listen to your podcast?
No. Fuck no. It's like, awful. Yeah. I hate the host.
Ah, he is a jerk.
Yeah, I was about speaking to call of the show.
I was about to call you a dick, and then I was like, maybe I'll call him a douche. And I'm like, I can't decide. I had to go on jerk.
You're a duke.
A duke?
Well, that's of douche and dick. You're a duke.
That's good, though. That's like royalty.
Or poo. Dookie.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Ha. Anyway, we should probably get to your review, huh?
Nah. We could save it for next week.
Nope. Next game to talk about tonight is called Toki, developed and published by Microids, released June 18th on Xbox One for $19.99, previously available on the Switch and PS4. The return of the wacky monkey, Toki sets off on a new adventure. The cult action platform game, originally released on arcade machines in 1989, is back with a Super Simian new version featuring all new hand-drawn graphics and reorchestrated music. Jacob, tell us about Toki.
It is hard as hell. Like,
yes, it is.
Like, first off, I'd never even heard of Toki. And when you first approached me on it, I actually assumed it was going to be one of those, arcade archives releases. Yeah. Yeah. And then you're like, oh, no, this is a brand new thing. I'm like, oh, okay. So, like, I checked it out. So, yeah, the plot of the story is that there's this disembodied hand that grabs your I don't know if she's really prehistoric, but, like,
close enough.
I don't know. Like, she's, you know, like your average jungle damsel in distress. Like, so it grabs her and it turns you, who's this buff Tarzan looking dude, into this monkey. And it's this monkey who can shoot, like, gumballs out of his mouth. The game doesn't really say what they are. I think they're cherries, maybe.
Maybe.
Is it fruit? Probably.
I don't know. Orbs. Magic orbs.
Yeah. Well, anyways, so, like, you hop all over the place and you visit to different locations, and you can get power-ups. Like, some of it turns, like, some of them you can spit, like, multiple balls at once, which Joe is very adept at.
All right.
you can also breathe fire for a short time, or, like, you have, like, this helmet that protects you. Like, I never actually quite figured out that power-up. Do you know what it did, the football helmet?
I think it just protects you from hits for a little bit.
Okay. I wasn't sure if it was, like, hits, like, period, or if it was, like, hits from above. Like, I don't know. It never lasted long enough. Couldn't think of it. I never actually lasted long enough in the game to really figure that out.
You never last long enough.
I'm taking pills for that.
Anyway.
So anyway, So yeah, this game is hard as hell. Like, I mean, which is to be expected from like something that was originally an arcade game, because of course they want you to shove all your quarters into the machine. And pretty much it's just, the game never feels cheap. I'll give it that. Actually, no, I take that back. What feels cheap to me is if you lose all your lives when you're like fighting a boss and you have to use a continue, that game is like, yeah, fuck you. And it starts you off back at the beginning of that level. And I'm like, there are so many times I'm just like,
why? No, God, no, why?
No, no. Like, because it was such a pain in the butt just to get to that end of the level. But like, it's really fun. Like, it's really fun. It's really addicting. It looks beautiful.
Oh yeah, the new hand-drawn graphics are gorgeous. The music is nice.
Yeah, and I like how they made it look retro. you can actually play with the settings, and there's like five different TV or arcade monitor settings that you can play with, like to give it that old school feel if you want. I thought that was a nice touch. Yeah, it's just, the game's hard as hell. Be ready for a challenge. I'd love to see Purnell go at it, although he'd probably find it to be a breeze. But yeah.
Yeah, so. I know Chris Taylor reviewed this one on the Switch when it first came out a couple of months ago, and I know he really enjoyed it as well.
Cool. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's the version I was reviewing. I don't know if you said it. I reviewed the Xbox version. So
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely recommend it. I don't even know what the price is.
$20. So for $20 on it, what do you say?
Not bad. I mean, you're definitely going to get your money's worth. I mean, Lord knows you would have spent that at the arcade. Easily on this game. It's beautiful. It's a lot of fun, and it's addicting. I mean, honestly, my biggest qualm is that, like, again, you know, is dealing with bosses and continues, but that's obviously in place, you know, from back in the day, like when you were shoving quarters into the arcade machine.
Yeah.
So
you're always going to have difficulty on arcade ports because of just how they were originally designed.
Right. You know, so it's really not like, you know, it's not like gameplay or, you know, it's really just, it's an arcade game. Dang it.
Oh man, well Jacob, it is always a pleasure having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final words before we move on?
Not really. I picked up Crossed Swords, the Neo Geo game. I don't know, looking forward to playing that tonight. Have you played it?
No.
Oh well, it's not similar to Crossed Swords like you play in the gym locker room.
Oh god,
tell you that much.
All right, moving on. We got Royal Sefton here. Royal, how are you doing?
I'm good. How you doing?
I am doing just good as well. Sweet. I guess I was going to say just great as well, but it's not all great.
That's all like, good.
I gotta do work and stuff. So well, it's good.
It's a bummer. On a Saturday?
I mean, I'm recording with you, aren't I?
Yeah, no.
This is my work. I'm at the office right now.
The time we share, Joe, is not work. But if you feel that way about it, okay, let's just push on through.
I treasure our time, Royal.
Oh, okay.
I cherish it.
Yay!
I don't get enough of it. We really don't have enough Royal Sefton on the show anymore.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm busy man right now. So, one game at a time.
Indeed. But you're here now, so what are you up to?
So, been playing Seeds of Resilience.
Oh, you're just jumping right into this, huh?
Oh, you want to know what I'm doing that makes me busy. Oh, yeah.
I was trying to make small talk.
Oh, no, it's okay. I thought this was just work. So, okay, some small talk then. Here we go. I'm back in school. I'm working full time and parenting full time. So it's the whole trifecta, you know. But now my brain is like awash in statistics and data mining stuff, and my head hurts. So yeah, here we are.
Here we are indeed. What kind of statistics?
The really boring kind.
Give us something random. Just what kind of statistic can you just pull out of thin air right now?
Sure. So multiple linear regression algorithms. And what did I just finish up on? My brain is soup right now, dude. I've been trying to compare different methods of prediction for the last bit of the chapter covered data sets over time. So predicting, you know, like what happens on the different seasons, or following a trend, or combining trends and seasons into a a pattern within a pattern, that kind of thing.
That is so far above my pay grade.
It's fascinating, isn't it?
But it pays the bills too. Well, you brought it up a little bit ago. We might as well dive into this. Seeds of Resilience. You are here to talk about this game. You ready?
Sure.
All right. Seeds of Resilience, developed by Subtle Games, published by Goblin Studio, releasing out of Steam Early Access June 13th for $13.99. Ready to start anew, build a village from scratch in Seeds of Resilience. Learn to choose the right items, understand nature's patterns, use real-life-based construction and craft techniques in this turn-based tycoon game. Royal, tell us about Seeds of Resilience.
I think, since you said it was a tycoon-type game, I agree. I was going to say, I think a good alternative title might be like Castaway Tycoon or something. You end up on a procedurally generated island of isometric squares. So it's kind of got this like 45-degree populous tilt. It's really cool looking. And pretty hand-drawn, too. There's some good and bad to go with that piece, but I want to start by talking about the things that are really, really nice just right out the starting gate. It's a pretty game. It looks like a labor of love, a small dev team. And the way the game plays is quasi-turn-based. It's a patient game. So you're not really, you know, faced with having to make your decisions in 20 seconds, 30 seconds, anything like that. It's not real time and pause type stuff, but you have to pick what you're going to do with each of your survivors on this island. They each have their own set of skills that are catered toward woodworking, metalworking, farming, different essential things that you got to do to survive. And they all have their own stomachs to feed. They've got their own health meters. And you have to take care of getting them set up and ultimately meet some goal, whether you're playing in mission mode or survival mode. So it's kind of broken into those two different ways of playing. The mission mode is where you have a specific objective, and to get there, you're going to have to meet other objectives as you go. So the gameplay is very much a micro managing of resources type game, where each of it's usually I think it goes up to six survivors at a time, but a lot of the missions start out with like two or three. Yeah. You have to start from the bottom. You know, you arrive with nothing but your raft, which you can scrap immediately for some salvage.
Sail the fuck out of there.
That'd be cool too, but that's apparently not how the game is. Do you want to play the game or not, Joe? The way it's set up, though, you just kind of drift onto the raft, you land, and then it's interesting. It's kind of out of body. Like, you don't tell the characters where to go. You just pick who's going to do what, and you just start clicking around the island and doing it. Whether you have one person that's out picking up crabs for dinner, another one that's going to go chop down trees, another one that's going to go pick fruits and berries or whatever. You need to get the different resources that are required to build the structures, the workshops, the tools, and then sometimes you need workshops to build better structures. You can see, like, you know, the whole tech tree catastrophe. And you only have so many hours per person that you can allocate. So they kind of have these resource points, and it's measured by time. And the amount of time you get is based on the condition of the character, as well as certain traits. Like, some of them might not sleep as well as others, or might cause others to not sleep as well. Like, apparently if they're like loud snorers or insomniacs, that can affect how many hours per day they have. I'm serious. It's very very detailed game. Each character has these different traits that really impact how well they work together with others, and whether you want to bunk them in the same lean-to or if you want to put them in their own structure for certain advantages, you could. It's remarkably detailed and very, very deep as far as just resource management goes. So in a sense, I think if people don't enjoy that kind of minutia, it might seem really grindy. But if you're looking for something that's more puzzling, it feels like a resource management puzzle, then I think it's going to be a better fit for your play style. But as you progress, you eventually have to, you know, meet whatever the final objective is. And in the case of survival mode instead of mission mode, you end up with a ship. You have to build a ship to get out of there, right? And with the missions, it might just be something else like put everybody in a shack. Hooray, you're done. And obviously the missions get progressively more difficult, and they introduce their own little twists and turns, like, you know, you might have an infinite summer when you just have a lot of time to gather stuff, or you might have really severe weather, and I've actually seen my house get blown away, which really sucks.
Oh, man.
And if you're without food, like, you have to have a minimum amount of food for every day, and you have to have shelter for all your characters. If you're without those things, they have fewer hours in the day to do stuff, their health declines, and eventually if their hit points reach zero, they die. So, you can quickly see how it can become a downward spiral if you are not managing your resources effectively on day one, you know, and onward. You could end up with, you know, a corpse on day four and no place to put the other ones. They're just going to starve to death. Yeah. Or weather will get them. But the thing that I got to get into some of the negatives, having said all this stuff, you know, it's the game is very praiseworthy for all of its detail. The problems are mostly interface based for me. It's got these really tiny elements in the UI, and I can't really tell some of them apart. And maybe it's old man age, I don't know, but like there are three different types of branches based on the types of wood you pick up, and you cannot intermingle them to create one house. You have to have all of one type or all of another type or all of another type to do the job, which to me seems really nitpicky. Like if I'm starving to death on a desert island, I really don't give a shit if I'm mixing my oak and my birch or whatever the hell. There may be reasons why I couldn't do that. That may be something I'm not familiar with, but I assume a stick is a stick. You put them together, you know, you got yourself a tent.
Who Your cares? Character just has really bad OCD,
and yes,
he can't have the different kinds together. Like a grass hut with a brick roof? No, I can't do that.
No, you see, alternatively, they could have let that happen and then given him a trait saying doesn't sleep as well if his huts aren't kosher or something. I don't know, whatever the hell it is. If they don't abide specific rules. No. So that part's kind of goofy for me, and it's just kind of hard to visually tell some things apart because they're so tiny. And you can zoom in and you can set UI scaling, but it still feels like some of the hand-drawn stuff is just so difficult to really see. Makes for a bit of a challenge there. Not the kind of challenge that, you know, you would want a game to provide, just a challenge of convenience. Yeah. The other thing that is, since it's not really, you know, real time or anything, you know, like I said, time is kind of like a resource, and you allocate each person to do a certain amount of stuff with the amount of hours they have. I would have liked to have an undo button or a confirm button. Instead, as soon as you click something, you commit to it. And I have made some really grievous errors sometimes, and they're just simple things, but every little bit can count sometimes, like making one too many fishing spears, and suddenly I'm without the string I needed for something else, or whatever the resources are. Having the ability to back up would have been really nice, because it can just be a really simple, you know, oops, I clicked in the wrong spot kind of error, and it sets you back tremendously, because every little bit can count, especially early on. So I just little things that I think could have made the game less inconvenient at times, and still provide a good challenge, because I mean, a lot of the game's challenge is thought work. You know, how are you going to get there from here and do it well? How are you going to keep your fishing yields high enough to keep everybody fed at day 20? You know, a lot of these challenges are perfectly viable without having the added complexity of a user interface that's just straight up unfriendly. So, you know, little tweaks would have been nice there, I think. That said, when you start playing from mission one, you get a good sense of tutorial with it. So it's pretty cool. And they give you little suggestions and hints with every day. It's like, hey, maybe we should build this. Maybe we should do something with this. Well thought out. So, in general, though, the game is, I think, really well formed. It's really well thought out. It feels like it's coming out of early access at the right time. I have a lot of great things to say about it.
Awesome. Well, the only question left is $13.99. What do you say?
That's going to depend on the player, obviously. But to me, it's somewhere between try it and buy it. Like, I feel like for that price, for $14 or so, you're getting a lot of game. Be willing to play in survival mode, and you get to pick your characters later on, unlock new stuff, and you can get a lot of mileage out of it. But I feel like it's a great game, and that's definitely the right price point for it.
Awesome. Sounds good.
What game, Dad? Seeds of Resilience, son.
Dad, what game?
It's called Seeds of Resilience. You haven't played it. It involves a lot more reading.
I thought you meant Fortnite.
No, I'm not talking about Fortnite, dude.
That's beautiful. Royal, do you have any final words?
Not talking about Fortnite, dude.
All right, and finally tonight, we've got Chris Taylor joining us. Chris, how's it going?
Hey, going good.
You are the tail end of another monster episode.
Oh, tail end of a monster episode, okay.
We got a big one.
Nice. I didn't know if monsters was like the theme or something.
No, it's just a big one with a whole shitload of reviews.
Sweet, I love it. Yeah. I just got back from GameStop. I picked up my pre-ordered copy of Bloodstained.
Ooh.
Finally, after 6 years.
Yeah.
I had to back out of the Kickstarter. Because I just kickstarted Toe Jam and Earl, and then Bloodstained, the Kickstarter, came out just after that. And I was like, ugh, I need to kickstart it at a high enough level to get a Wii U physical copy. And then I had to back out at the last minute. And sure enough, I've just been waiting ever since.
Yeah, I ordered mine from Game UK to get a steelbook with it, and that shipped, nice. So I'm hoping everything shows up within the next week or so.
Oh, but good.
Coming from UK, who knows how long it'll take.
Yeah, I'm happy because it's finally here. I'm like, one of the longest anticipated games I think I've ever, besides maybe Final Fantasy VII Remake, but, you know. I actually have been playing Final Fantasy VII on the Switch, the original, more like the glossed over original version.
Yeah, I've been playing that on Xbox too. So
nice. It actually looks really good. It does. I was surprised at how clean it looks. But yeah,
some of the backgrounds are still kind of smudgy and blurry, but
yeah, ish.
Overall,
but I mean,
it still looks pretty good
versus Final Fantasy IX.
Oh yeah.
It looks so much. It's kind of funny because it's like its derpiness actually helps it in this sense, because they could just gloss over everything and it just kind of looks, as long as it looks better than it did on PlayStation, then it's perfect.
Yeah.
Whereas Final Fantasy IX, I think we might have had too high of expectations on that one. And then it's like, well, I can't count the polygons and the characters anymore, but I can count the pixels in the background.
Yeah, some of those backgrounds look pretty rough after all these years. But
I'm just happy it's all on Switch now. Playing Final Fantasy VII on a Nintendo is like a trip.
Hey,
and portable.
How about on Xbox? How's that for weird, too?
Yeah.
At least Nintendo and Square have a history.
It's true. Well, I mean, that's the thing, is that I wanted it so bad to come out on a Nintendo system. And it only took the 23 years, or 22 years.
Only.
And by the same token, I've been playing Trials of Mana, Seiken Densetsu 3, in English on a Switch, and that also, similarly, was like 24 years of waiting. But I didn't hear about that one until a few years after it was out, but I still... That was one of those that I wouldn't play it on emulation, because I kept losing data, so... because I only use shit computers. Present computer included, actually, so.
Yeah, that's a game. I still can't get used to calling it Trials of Mana.
I had to struggle just now to say it. but I'm like, getting used to it.
I keep getting it confused with Trails of Mana, Trails and Trials. So I keep getting them mixed up.
Is there a... What?
There isn't a Trails of Mana, but well, I just...
But there's Trails of Cold Steel and Trails of... There's a Trails series.
Yeah, so the Trail series is throwing me off with Trials. But either way, it was still $40 to get that fucking game. Jesus.
Oh, yeah, I'm actually holding out on the physical, but I've been playing the digital with a friend who bought a... Who finally, you know, after... Yeah, she has a very hate relationship with Nintendo.
Oh God!
And the one thing that finally got her to purchase a Switch was this collection, and it's so far her only game. Oh, besides Cat Quest, which a friend bought for her.
Sweet.
So she has Cat Quest and Collection of Mana, and that's it. And her and I have been playing through Trials of Mana. So
that's one way to do it.
And I've got my physical copy pre-ordered for August, so I should be set.
Nice.
I waited 24 years. What's two more months, you know?
And you're playing it anyway, so.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of playing.
Speaking of playing, you got three games to talk about. Should we cover them now?
Yeah.
All right. The next game to talk about tonight is called Cyberian, the time-traveling warrior developed by Ritual Games, published by Rattalaika Games. Released June 18th on PS4 and Vita, 19th on Xbox One, 21st on the Switch for $4.99. Drawing inspiration from old-school platformers, Cyberian, the time-traveling warrior is an arcade title with some beat-em-up gameplay qualities. Across four levels, players must take control of Cyberian, a warrior who discovers the Sword of Ages and gets transported to a cyberpunk future. Chris, tell us about this one.
All right, Cyberian. Well, this one... I almost asked for, but then I was like, it's so cheap that I'm just going to see if I get it. And if I don't, I'm going to buy it. And sure enough, I got it. So great. Good old Rattalaika Games with all these like awesome, you know, small, really pixelated games, you know?
I love Rattalaika Games because they put out so many of these. I don't want to demean them by calling them cheap, but they are cheap games.
They're inexpensive.
They're inexpensive. There you go.
What? Name an expensive Rattalaika game. I mean, I can't.
I think their most is $10.
Yeah, then $10, that's fine.
Yeah.
I spent $10 on dinner. This is consistent with their usual output, which is exciting for me. So, this game is a pixelated side scroller, very much done in the 8-bit style. But rather than saying NES, I actually think strongly that this looks like a Master System game. Hmm. If you played enough of the two systems, you'd kind of know what I'm talking about. But for one, it's using FM sound, so that's already a giveaway. It's got that Sega-y sound to it. Mm. But the other thing is that it has this intense color palette, and like that always says Master System to me, because the Master System could push out like all these colors that Nintendo don't. that's kind of what this is, except that of course it's got all the modern amenities, such as silky smooth platforming, very, very fast. Actually, I was very surprised, because when you think Barbarian, you think that slow and ponderous, like Golden Axe style, and especially since it's advertised as a beat-em-up, which I kind of disagree with, but no, you actually move really fast. Jumps are a little floaty. You kind of have to be a little precise because you skid a little. But it's not bad, actually. The levels are set up cleverly enough that it doesn't become a problem. It's basically the storyline of it is literally a random barbarian guy who I don't even remember if he had a name or not. He finds the Sword of Ages. He's like, we finally climbed this mountain and found the Sword of Ages, and there's no one else on the screen, so I have no idea who we is. maybe he's just, you know, the royal we, the editorial. Yeah. And as soon as he, you know, plucks up the sword, it, time travels him to a cyberpunk future. And it's really funny because the first thing that happens is, you know, you're on the first screen where you have to then move on. It's got that kind of, you know, like a beat 'em up, it has the thing where you have to clear the screen before the little go sign will come up and be like ding, 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 and you have to like move on to the next screen. It's like two bums who are clearly tripping, and one of them, you know, they this game has a lot of charm to it because, like, the text, like, kind of floats around and undulates if people are being either scared or, again, high. And, yeah, so they see a barbarian pop up out of nowhere in a dark alley, and that's so 80s, like, time travel fantasy. Like, you know, if we haven't seen a ton of them, we've at least seen them through, like, Mystery Science Theater 3000 and all those.
Oh, yeah.
So it's very much, you know, Conan in New York kind of thing. And then at that point, the game sort of gives you a mini tutorial on how to swing your sword, which actually you do need. You need to pay attention to that, and I'll get to that in a second. But you can choose to hit one of the bums with your sword, and you do get a trophy if you hit one of them instead of just moving on and practicing on real enemies. I don't think you can actually kill the bums, but they get very scared.
Oh, God.
If you start swinging your sword wildly at them. So speaking of swinging your sword, that's kind of where this game separates from others, in that you get a dedicated three-hit combo that you can use. Otherwise, you have to go in and just slash once, because and the combo is based on timing. If you get the timing wrong, then you kind of whiff, and then you're, like, vulnerable for half a second. Which, given that these enemies are very pattern-oriented and very quick on the draw, if you, you know, find yourself stumbling at the last second, you're almost guaranteed to take a hit. Fortunately, they were nice enough to give a really obvious tell as to when you should swing your sword. So, you know, you swing your sword the first time, and then Dude Bros, his headband, like this red headband that he wears, turns yellow, and as soon as it turns yellow, you hit the button again, and then it turns yellow and you hit the button again. And then you can do your three hit combo, and that will stun lock the enemies. So as long as you keep the combos going, you can, you know, deal enough damage to, like, get through them. And you know, when you get up to, like, bosses or even, like, harder enemies a little later, you gotta execute this combo like two or three times in order to destroy these enemies, and you just cannot afford to lose enough hearts, so you really have to master the combos. And like I said, this game is very arcadey. You know, you have a button for push and a button for swing the sword, and then a button for a roll attack that you get after the first level, and then a button for a powered up attack that I have yet to get. So, you know, that's another thing, is that the roll attack gives you that temporary invincibility, like, you know, what Dark Souls made so popular.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, games have been doing that forever. but you do get one of those after the first boss. And, but like I said, it's mostly about swinging that sword at the right time. Now, the crazy thing about this game is that the levels, you know, it's only four levels in the game, which, you know, that I would say by any stretch, that's fairly short. But, you know, even so, the levels are fairly long, and as far as I can tell, there are no checkpoints. So you have to get through the entire level with your starting set of hearts, and then you collect coins along the way, which you can then use in vending machines that are placed sporadically in the levels, you know, at the most convenient, conveniently out of reach kind of places, like right after something that's probably going to kill you, then you get a chance to refill your heart, and you have to spend 20 coins per heart. And so, you know, you don't just get to refill all of your life. You actually have to have made a lot of coins to get things going. And fortunately, there is at least one checkpoint for every level, and that's right before the boss. So you can use as many turns. There's no life counter, so you can use, you know, you have infinite lives, basically. And so therefore, you can, like, actually learn the boss's patterns, because it'll always start you off at the boss once you're there.
That's good.
Yeah, and so, yeah, the actual presentation, like I said, it's got that cool, like, cyberpunk look. Pretty humorous, I'd say, as well as, you know, pretty cool. Like, for instance, the second stage introduces these big fat guys with, and again, these are 8-bit sprites, but they still have boob jiggle physics. As they try to spear you to death. And one of them, like, the first one you stumble upon is just eating a hamburger. And then once you defeat him, you get a trophy for, I think it says Burger Time or something like that.
Nice.
The trophies flow pretty freely in this game. So if that's a thing for you, then this game will provide.
Nice.
Although, as early as it is right now, I couldn't look at the trophy list. It was like coming soon. So that'll come along, I'm sure. I've been getting the trophies, but it just won't show me what ones are ahead. So
yeah, that happens on Xbox too.
Yeah.
Where if the game's not out yet, or it's like just released, the achievements might not show up yet, but they'll still pop in the game.
Yeah, so that's something, I guess, if you're buying this game immediately, to note that it hasn't updated that yet.
All right, well, that aside, $5 on it, what do you think?
Well, $5, and it's Rattalaika. I mean, this is a foregone conclusion. Obviously, you should buy this. Fans, like I said, of old school arcade games, it's a little on the hard side, but I never at any point felt like it was unfair. And that's always the goal for me. If the game is hard but not unfair, then I like it. And this one meets that criteria beautifully. Like I said, I really love the presentation of it, because I really like when, you know, retro style games go the Master System route rather than just straight up looking like an NES game.
Yeah.
Although I love those too, so I'm just saying I appreciate the occasional nod to the Master System. So yeah, I couldn't find anything to really dislike in this one. It's a little different, and I like that. And for the price that it is, you might as well try it. In fact, I'm probably going to download it on Switch just to have it portable, since it's on sale right now anyway.
Nice. There you go.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, next game to talk about is called Ovivo, developed by IsHard, published by Sometimes You. This one will be out July 3rd on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $6.99. Ovivo is a mesmerizing platformer with unusual mechanics where everything is as simple as black and white. The journey in the metaphoric world filled with illusions and hidden messages awaits you. Chris, tell us about Ovivo.
Okay, Ovivo. Well, yeah, this game is a bit weird, and as soon as I saw that it's from Sometimes You, I was like, okay, that explains it. Really, as soon as I heard the soundtrack, I was like, okay, this is Sometimes You, I can tell. And they usually specialize in games that are very much on the difficult side, but I actually found this one fairly playable, so that's really good. So, yeah, it's hard to describe what the game looks like, but let's just say, okay, so you're a tiny bomb, like a little cartoon bomb, and you get plopped down onto a like a black platform, let's say, that has a curve, and the background is white, and you and the thing you're sitting on are black. Well, once you hit the A button, you will turn white and then flip through underneath, and now your playing field is the inside of that black line. And as you go down the curve, like whichever curve is relatively a dip for that bomb, it will move in that direction. You can also manually move it, but what you're relying on physically in this game is to get enough momentum to then pop out of, you know, switch colors again, pop out into the outside, and then kind of let the momentum bounce you over to the next platform. And so, if that makes any kind of sense, it's basically...
I was going to say, it's basically like a platformer with a dark and a light world, and the whole center of gravity is where it switches.
Yes, exactly. That's well put. And yeah, like, you basically have to make sure that you get enough momentum to be able to make the jumps to get to the thing correctly. Because if you fall off the screen, or there are even spike pits and things like that, then, you know, you just start from basically the last place where you... They start you off, like, basically exactly where you died, but at a convenient place to start again.
Yeah.
So this game is in no way punishing. You know, infinite lives, and they start you right where you left off, so you just, you know, proceed through the level until you get it. But yeah, it's actually some really interesting platforming stuff here, because what you're doing and what you kind of find out at the end of the level is that you're making your way through an abstract piece of art. Each of those black lines eventually, you know, it pulls out to form a... you know, the camera pulls out and shows you the whole picture, and it'll show you, like, this, you know, some really kind of psychedelic stuff, or as, you know, psychedelic as you can get for black and white.
Yeah.
I'd prefer to say abstract, I guess, but I'm not an art guy. This game is very artsy, though. The only The only thing, and I mean, this is very intentional on their part, but to me, I found it a little like, is that there's no words in the entire game, right? Except for, I think there's an intro that tells you about the, it tells you something. I don't even remember what it said. but there's kind of an intro, but like the actual menu where you select levels and things like that, is so obtuse. Like it, there's no clues. It just shows like this thing that looks like an artsy looking compass. Once you beat a level, it connects some dots to that thing. I guess there's some items that you collect in the stage, and if you collect all of them, then you get to move on to the next stage. But this is just context clues. Like, there's no words, and there's no sensible menu. Like, it's just you move pieces around, and then maybe you'll get that next level.
Yeah, they went for an artistic menu instead of an informational menu.
Exactly. And even, like, when you pause the game, it just gives you three icons that you can choose. That one of them definitely looks like the settings menu. And then, like, there's a play and, I guess, an exit or something like that. But, yeah. I just found the gameplay to be very interesting and sensible. And then I found the menu to be highly difficult and confusing. So that's that was like my initial impression of it. I eventually figured out how to get to other levels. Although it's been a minute, so I couldn't tell you exactly how to do it. but I really enjoyed the way that the levels are laid out. I like the way the physics works. And the music is, you know, it's just really chill, kind of chordal notes. You know, not the biggest bangers or anything like that. But you know, that is again sometimes that's a sometimes used staple. So can't fault them for that. No. So yeah, it's simultaneously interesting, and it's I would say it feels pretty casual, more so than like hardcore, but perhaps in a later level that I will eventually figure out how to access, maybe it gets a little bit harder, but I was pretty smoothly getting through these levels. So, I quite liked it.
Well then $7 on it. What do you say?
$7. I mean, for sure, people who enjoy, physics platformers and puzzle games of this ilk, will enjoy it. I just have to, you know, issue a warning about the menu to people, and that's, you know, maybe look at a walkthrough or something, or, you know, a video guide if it's available, or do what I did and just mash buttons until you figure out something. I do think the menu went a little far on the abstract concept, but I actually, in the levels, I really enjoyed this one. So $7 is not a high price to pay for a puzzle game that's at least this interesting. So I think it's good.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. One final game to talk about tonight, and this is your specialty, cat games. Captain Cat, developed by Render Code Games, published by Hidden Trap, released June 21st on the Switch for $6.99. Captain Cat travels the seven seas in his boat using his anchor as a hook to fish. Yeah, hook to fish for the delights and treasures hiding at the bottom of the sea, but navigating the depths of unknown waters is never easy. There are many mysterious dangers to face along the way. Can Captain Cat overcome them to catch enough fish to satisfy his hunger? Chris, did you satisfy your hunger for fishies?
I mean, here's the thing. I'm from the South, and we eat a lot of fish. But not my personal hunger for fish. But yes, I don't know. I got pretty far in it. Yeah, Captain Fish. So this is a, basically a, the best thing I can compare this to actually is something like, King Oddball or, you know, Tennis in the Face or Baseball Riot, you know, a sort of stage by stage using the one physics, thing that you have, like basically timing, in order to sort of navigate a, an elaborate stage setup. And in order to get, you know, the fish and get to the next level. So, yeah, basically, the way it controls is that you are, of course, Captain Cat in your boat. And you basically have a limited amount of space in which you can move left or right before you drop your anchor. Because apparently this is a fish who fishes with his anchor. I don't know why, but that's the truth of the matter, so... That's,
a cat's got to fish somehow, right?
Yeah, you know, I maybe I'm not the maritime expert here, but it seems like the anchor should maybe not be used to catch the fish, but oh well. It's anyways, so yeah, you move left to right and then you drop your anchor, and the way that the anchor drops is that it then kind of turns I want to say 90 degrees of motion, just goes back and forth, and then you kind of lock it into place by holding down the button. Couldn't tell you which button, but you'll figure it out. I think it's the B button. And the anchor then travels along that line until you stop, and then it like ties a knot or whatever, and then it starts doing the 90 degree spinning thing in another direction depending on where you put it. And then you aim it again, and then you shoot it again, and then you basically draw a line doing this in order to get to the fish. And so the way that you're rated in the levels is that, for one, did you catch the fish, and did you catch any other... There's, like, treasure chests in each stage as well that you're supposed to catch. And so if you caught all the treasure is one challenge. Did you use enough knots to stay under a certain number? So like a stage might have a 10 for the amount of knots that you can tie, so you can only change directions 10 times. And if you hit under that, then you get a trophy for that. And then the third trophy is a timer. So it's one of those where it's like, not only are you catching all the fish and all the treasure, but you're also trying to do it in as few moves as possible and under a timer.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. It's like, you know, and the trophies, of course, are golden starfish. And the fish, actually, in the first set of levels, are wasp fish. So I don't know. This game's kind of nuts. And then there's a, after 75 levels-ish, I think, of wasp fish, then you get a whole nother second. I think you get to unlock it after you get 40 goldfish, and it's housekeeper. And I haven't unlocked 40 goldfish yet, so I don't know what housekeeper is. And then there's a there's another stage that is called perfect, which is basically kind of the same thing, but instead of hooking a fish, you're just trying to get your anchor to go as far. Oh no, I'm sorry, that's infinite. Perfect is a whole nother set of puzzles where you only get one shot. You have to go straight from the boat to the fish in one shot, and they really set up some elaborate stuff to do this. Because for whatever reason, one of the common sort of tools in the game, or just part of the stage layout, is that they'll have portals, like from the game Portal.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be either blue or red, and they'll switch around on a timer. So whenever you hit a portal with your hook, if it's red, it will come out the red end in whatever direction that you have that you came into it from. So that presents this whole other side of the physics puzzles, because you not only have to get the timing right, and again, you can't stop the actual anchor or you lose the stage. You can't stop the anchor at any point until it's ready to turn. But you know, in perfect mode, you don't get to stop at all.
No.
So it's kind of like, all right, I have to aim this into this portal, and then it just has to keep going, and if it doesn't hit that fish, I lose. And that
Which
one was
is always
actually,
fun.
Yeah, I actually found that one to be really fun. Because, again, the stage designs for these levels are just great. It always feels casual, but it never feels too easy. And that's actually what I loved about King Oddball, which I actually got kind of obsessed with for a while. And then, like I said, there's an infinite mode whereby you just drop your anchor. You can turn as many times as you like. Your whole goal is just to get that anchor down as far as it will possibly go. And, you know, you have to dodge sea urchins and creatures that'll come out and eat it as long as it's moving. So you have to actually stop it from moving in order to get them to not bite it. I guess they're eels. And, you know, these are all critters that are also in the regular levels, but, you know, this is the infinite mode, like, kind of changes it all up. And, yeah, there's just a lot going on in this game. But what I actually kind of liked about this one the most is the personality of it. Not only, you know, the music is all like this over-the-top sea shanty type stuff, and the title screen literally has the cat yelling at you. He's like screaming at the top of his lungs to the music. It's quite disturbing.
That's beautiful.
And yeah, and then the regular stages all have this sea shanty sound, and the cat, you know, Captain Cat himself, when he loses, he like bawls his eyes out, and you know, for like a second, and then drops anchor again. And yeah, there's just like there's a lot of care went into this game for it being the casual type game that it is.
Nice. So $7 on this one. What do you say?
$7. I mean, I was surprised. I looked at this one before and I was like, I don't know. Maybe they're just they're trying to get on that boat with all the other great cat games that are out there. There's something about cat games, man. People bring their A game.
It is. It's all about the cat games.
Yeah, so this is a surprise for me. I actually like this one a lot more than I thought I was going to, and so therefore I have no choice but to recommend it. Awesome. Now it's probably not going to hit my top 9 cat list that I just published on Twitter, and I guess you just retweeted, but maybe it'll make the next list. So, but yeah, this one was good, and I'm definitely going to be playing more of it. So I do recommend it.
Awesome, sounds good.
Yeah.
All right, well, that is it for this episode. Chris, thanks so much for coming on and chatting about these games. Thanks again to Pernell, to Tim, to Jacob, and to Royal. I told you, this was a big one.
Wow.
Yeah. So thanks to everyone for coming on, doing their bit, doing their thing. We're going to wrap up the show with Prancing Dad by the Tiberian Sons because I love that song.
Yeah.
Chris, do you have any final words to end it?
I was going to self-plug and say follow me on Twitch for some more cat action because I'm playing a Khajiit Thief on Legendary mode in Skyrim Wednesday through Sundays, 8 p.m. to midnight. But past that, check out the top 9 cat games on Twitter. I got all but I think 2 of them from this, 3 of them I think, from this podcast, so it's kind of a best of. And yeah, like go check those things out, and y'all, congratulations, you made it to the end of the episode. So, enjoy that Tiberian Sons.